Gamma says GA shipments are down by almost half so far this year. The U.S. Air Force prepares the X-51 for its Mach 6 test. And was Continental 128 an accident or just an incident? This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, August 6, 2009. Notwithstanding the encouraging attendance figures at Oshkosh and the regional events this year, general aviation sales appear to have a long climb ahead. The General Aviation Manufacturers Association released shipment and billing figures this week on the industry's second quarter. In the first half of 2009, total GA airplane shipments fell 45.9%, and billings are down 22.7%, to a total of $9.26 billion. Piston airplane deliveries fell by more than half. Gamma President Pete Bunce did point out some bright spots. Quote, "We are encouraged that the overall economic picture is showing some signs of improvement. Flight hours are stabilizing, used inventories are beginning to shrink, and our manufacturers are seeing signs of renewed interest in airplane purchases. We are also encouraged by reports that accelerated depreciation, passed by Congress earlier this year, is stimulating some new orders. Even though it's too early to distinguish these indications as a trend, we are hopeful that this momentum will continue through the second half of the year," unquote. The first tests of a Mach 6 scramjet aircraft are inching closer. The U.S. Air Force reports airmen successfully mated the X-51A Waverider to its B-52 Stratofortress mothership last month at Edwards Air Force Base in California. Airborne testing of the vehicle's Pratt & Whitney Rocketdyne scramjet propulsion system is set for early December. The plan calls for the B-52 to carry the X-51A to 50,000 feet over the Pacific Ocean, then release it. A solid rocket booster from an Army tactical missile system will then ignite and accelerate the X-51 to about Mach 4.5. Then, the supersonic combustion ramjet will propel the vehicle for 5 minutes to more than Mach 6. Hypersonic combustion generates intense heat, which is being handled in this design by routing the engine's own JP7 fuel to help keep the engine at the desired operating temperature. Data from the flight will be telemetered back to Edwards before the X-51A plunges into the Pacific Ocean at the conclusion of the test. If that sounds like an ignominious fate for such an advanced vehicle, consider that the previous record for scramjets is about 10 seconds, limited by the point at which the vehicle disintegrates from heat damage. Was Continental Flight 128's encounter with clear air turbulence an incident or an accident? The terms have legal definitions for the National Transportation Safety Board, and the board says it's reviewing reports and data from cockpit recorders to see whether the encounter qualifies as an accident. If it does, NTSB could launch a formal probe. In the FAR, 830.2 defines an accident as an incident in which any person suffers death or serious injury, or in which the aircraft receives substantial damage. Substantial damage and serious injury both also have technical definitions, so we'll just have to wait and see where this case falls. Up next on ANN, Goodyear's second-generation moon tire is a hit. Things are starting to percolate at Spaceport America. And TSA is testing its newest scanner in Rochester. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800- for Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for August 6th. I'm Paul Plack. In the original Apollo moon missions, the lunar rovers were equipped with tires made by Goodyear. The program didn't last very long, and about the only promotional benefit the company got from its involvement was applying the term moon boots to the F-32, the industry's first studless winter traction tire, introduced in the early 1970s. It's a sign of just how long ago that was, and how abruptly Apollo ended, that when Goodyear was recently tasked with developing tires for the much heavier lunar vehicles we'll need for the next phase of manned moon exploration, the company had to find some retired guys to figure out how the originals were made. The problem with moon tires is that rubber can't hold up to the temperature extremes and intense UV radiation, and there's no air around to refill them even if leaks could be repaired in the field. So, drawing on reconstructed past experience, Goodyear has developed a new tire that consists of 800 interwoven, load-bearing springs, avoiding a single-point failure risk. The new spring tire was installed on NASA's Lunar Electric Rover test vehicle and put through its paces at the Johnson Space Center's Rock Yard in Houston, where it performed successfully. Vivaki Asnani, NASA's principal investigator at the Glenn Research Center, says the tire has impressed everyone who's seen the technology. Quote, "I spoke with 10 to 15 members of Congress and about 60 staffers. Virtually everyone I spoke with was blown away by the idea that this technology may one day be used not only for extraterrestrial vehicles, but also perhaps for vehicles here on Earth." Unquote. While Virgin Galactic's forthcoming commercial space tourism operation is the best-known tenant of New Mexico's Spaceport America, there are less conspicuous projects already logging successes at the facility. On Tuesday, Up Aerospace reported the successful launch of an unmanned aerial vehicle prototype for its new client, Moog FTS. New Mexico Business Weekly reports Up has also been testing a new space vehicle for Lockheed Martin at the spaceport since last year. Spaceport Executive Director Steve Landine observes, quote, "Aerospace companies are increasingly becoming aware of the opportunities available at Spaceport America. I'm proud that we can continue to set the standard for safe, low-cost commercial spaceflight," unquote. As for the spaceport's most famous tenant, Virgin Galactic declines to put hard deadlines on its start of operations, but expects to initiate service from California's Mojave Desert before eventually moving into its new headquarters at Spaceport America. The U.S. Transportation Security Administration announced on Monday it will begin testing backscatter advanced imaging technology at Greater Rochester International Airport in New York State. The technology quickly and unobtrusively screens passengers for metallic and non-metallic threats without physical contact. Privacy protections are in place, similar to those used in current full-body scans, but this technology goes a step further. The image generated is never seen by a human. It's analyzed by computer. Backscatter technology uses low-level X-ray, and TSA says a single scan subjects the passenger to radiation equivalent to flying on an airplane for about 2 minutes. TSA will assess the operational efficiency and public acceptance of backscatter technology in this test. Ironically, Rochester is the hometown of Kodak. Say cheese! Still ahead, a company in Cleveland could see a windfall from the latest Airbus ADs. British Airways prepares for more cuts in capacity and staff. And will the legacy air carriers ever recover from the recession? You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're going to fly in the soup, you got to have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, August 6th. I'm Paul Plack. British Airways summed up its first quarter, which ended June 30th, with these words from CEO Willie Walsh. Quote, "Trading conditions continue to be very challenging, with underlying revenue down 16.8% and no visible signs of improvement," unquote. Walsh says 22 aircraft will be grounded during the winter months, and flights to JFK, Newark, and other airports will be curtailed. Delivery of BA's first A380 will be delayed by 5 months, and the second by 2 years. An additional 3,700 positions will be cut. BA says passenger volume is likely to increase during the summer, but, quote, "The industry continues to face very difficult trading conditions with considerable uncertainty over the likely time frame of the recovery from the global economic downturn," unquote. Bad news for one is often an opportunity for another. The ruckus over pitot tubes on Airbus planes following the Air France 447 disaster last month has become an opening for an Ohio-based company's product. Aero Instruments of Cleveland says that after 18 months of rigorous testing and evaluation, the FAA has approved one of the company's pitot probes as a replacement part on Airbus airplanes worldwide. More than 4,500 planes have been recommended for upgrades from the Thales pitot tubes suspected of playing a role in the fate of Flight 447. Included are the Airbus A318, 319, 320, 321, A330, and A340 series planes. In addition to offering air data sensors for commercial airlines, Aero Instruments manufactures pitot probes and related devices and systems for the general aviation, rotorcraft, defense, business jet, and unmanned aerial vehicle markets. Finally, proving that a recession produces both winners and losers, industry analysts say cuts made by legacy full-service airlines may be hard to reverse when the economy improves, because low-cost carriers have moved aggressively to buy planes, add routes, and expand market share at the expense of their more established rivals. The Associated Press notes that AirAsia and Ryanair are two examples of companies doing well as travelers look for more economical alternatives. AirAsia, which is based in Malaysia, posted a record profit of $56 million during 2009's first quarter. Ryanair's guidance to investors predicts a fiscal 2010 profit of 250 million euros, or about $350 million U.S. One of the other problems which may be faced by so-called full-service carriers when the economy recovers is the loss of brand identity. After all, if Southwest lets you bring two check bags free and Delta charges you extra, who's really the full-service airline? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, hear EAA President Tom Poberesny reflect on AirVenture 2009 and look ahead to 2010. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.